Hello, we are Angela Benjamin
and David J. Lilly,
and we are both jewellery designer makers who spend every day surrounded by shiny things.
We are both passionate about jewellery
and love learning all we can about jewellery making and sharing what we've learned with you.
Perhaps you're a jewellery lover or creative type, or spend your days at the bench like we do.
Whichever it is, we hope you'll enjoy our sparkling chit-chat, our silly stories, and our thoughts on living a creative and slightly dusty life.
With a few laughs along the way.
You can find our podcasts on all your favourite apps, including, of course, the biggies, Apple, Spotify, and Chrome Podcasts.
So if you want to know who we are and share our passion for all that glitters, then stay with us for the next 30-ish minutes.
This is
Ange
and David with Little Gems on Jewellery
and Life.
Good morning. This is today's episode of Little Gems in Jewellery and Life, and I'm really excited to be joined by Master Goldsmith, Darren Sherwood. So Darren's going to be telling us a little bit about his practice and how he got into jewellery, and I'm sure you're going to find it quite intriguing and inspiring. So Darren, let's kick off. First of all, thank you for coming.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And so how did you get into jewellery making? Because your jewellery journey really interested me.
Yeah. Well, I started off, all I knew when I was younger was that I wanted to go into art. Being from West Indian family, that's like unheard of. You don't do that. Mm-hmm. That's not what we do.
No.
So, got into Central St. Martin's, where I did a foundation course there. I thought I wanted to do sculpture or animation or something like that. And I tried sculpture and I was really not good at it. And my tutor just went, a bit technical for this, aren't you? Try jewellery. And I was like, jewellery? That's a course. I never heard of it before that. And tried it out and it kind of bridged the gap that I wanted. Like I didn't have the mind for fine art. So like sculpture or painting or things like that. But because I was just too technical, whereas fine artists are a lot more free in their mindset. Mm-hmm. And which I didn't really appreciate until that time. And then I tried jewellery and it kind of ticked all those boxes. And then I went to Kent Institute of Art and Design, which is, I think it's gone now. But down in Medway, we learned all the metalwork where I trained up really as a silversmith. Was lucky enough to work for companies like Grant MacDonald and Padgham & Putland, where I learned silver, you know, the crafting silverware. From there, when I left uni, I had an interview with an ex-Cartier diamond mounter in London, in the West End. And he taught me the fine, you know, how to do traditional handmade jewellery to the ridiculous high standard that's necessary when you're working in the West End, as opposed to places like other jewellery places around the country. And from there, I worked with him for 6 years, where I kind of had such a big, broad learning curve from doing antiques to doing fine jewellery to doing high jewellery, you know, working on very closely with the Cartier lot at the time, a lot of the Boodles guys as well. And then from there, I worked for Graff Diamonds for 8 years. I was there doing their high-end pieces, the big necklaces, the big rings, and so on and so forth. Then I also started getting involved in CAD design for them. So I was one of their main CAD designers. After leaving there, I went to Stephen Webster and Garrard, worked for both of them as head of CAD and 3D and a diamond mounter as well. So I was kind of doing both at the same times again, like much as it was in Graff. I worked with them for about 3 years. All in between this, I was still doing private work for other companies outside of, you know, every evening or in my other workshop that I started renting in London. So would be when work was finished, we'd go to the other workshop and start doing the other work that the other shops needed. So the other designers, whatever they be, used to do work for them. And then I went self-employed proper after that in about 2016. And I stayed in the West End for a few years until a gentleman in my area, he was an old jeweler. He's been there for like 41 years and he wanted to retire. So I ended up taking over his shop, which is something I never, ever planned to do, is do retail. But there you go. So now I've got a shop and a massive workshop downstairs, so which is where I am now.
And so, all those places that you worked, were you freelance or were you employed by all of them?
No, I was employed. So my first job I was employed for 6 years, then Graf for 8 years, Stephen Webster and Garrard, I was there for 3 years. And in between that, I was working for a load of other companies at the same time. So that's kind of the best way of learning, because if you just stay with doing one job, you'll only learn that one person's style. Whereas the good thing with where I was, I learned how to do the style of Harry Winston, the style of Mikimoto, the style of Cartier, the style of Boodles, the style of Fabergé. You know, I've worked for all of those companies.
So
yeah.
Aren't they?
Yeah. And they, and the thing is, because I've worked for other companies who make stuff for them, you have to always go to the highest standard you can for all these different companies, because it's their name on the line, and you know, you don't really want to damage their name or skills, really. So,
and so that moves me on to my next question: your studio space that you've inherited.
Yeah.
How would you describe it?
Oh, it's bloody huge. I love
oh,
it.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. It's way overkill. I could fit loads of people down there. I'm just like, I'm gradually turning into Gollum, hiding away in my basement of just tools and stuff.
And
so initially,
it's just you.
It's just you. Me. Yeah. Nice. So I should really try to share the space, but I don't like people.
I feel blessed.
Yeah, you know. Oh, God. But that was the thing. When I came in here the first time, and the guy who was here before, he had so much stuff everywhere upstairs. It's like a traditional old jewelry shop. You know, he was here 41 years and just hoarding jewelry and just had everything you could possibly think of. You come in here and ask for, I want a hip flask made in silver. I've got one of those. Give me 2 seconds. I'll run downstairs, find it, because he's just been hoarding for so many years. So he's like, oh, you don't want to take the shop over from me, do you? I went, nah, I don't want to do retail. I'm happy where I am, thanks. I'm just in London. I'm doing my thing. I'm fine. I said, oh, come downstairs for a cup of tea. And he took me down these little dingy stairs, and I turned the corner, and this whole workshop just opens up like a TARDIS. It's absolutely massive. I was like, oh, I could fit so many tools down here. So I thought you might like it. And that was kind of, so he knew what he was doing. He totally knew what he was doing. But so yes, I've got my office that I use for CAD, 3D printing, 3D scanning and stuff like that. Then I've got a polishing room. I've got a massive workshop area that's kind of split between, I've got my 3D printers outside there, my hand raising stuff, so the hammers, the dummy punches and stuff. And then the other side, I've got my desk where I do design work, and my setting bench and my diamond mounting bench.
Wow.
I did have 6 other benches up for, just in case I wanted to get people involved, because I was going to open up a school down here, which I still might, I'm still umming and ahhing about. I may do, just to do it like evening classes or something, because a lot of people do ask me to teach them, yet to find the time to do it more than anything. So
yeah, it sounds like you are really busy, and instead I feel really grateful that you managed to squeeze the thing, because I know you've just finished doing Goldsmith there. But
yes,
can you tell us a bit about, aside from Goldsmith, I'm assuming you made new pieces for that, is there something that you're working on at the moment that you can talk about?
Yeah, I mean, at the moment, it's kind of, Goldsmiths was a bit of an eye-opener for me, because after doing so many years for working for so many different people, a setter that I know, he said this amazing line to me, which was quite prophetic coming from a setter, but you have 1,000 styles, but none of them are your own, because you're so used to working for other people. But when it came to doing Goldsmiths, it's like, oh, bugger, I got to design stuff for myself. That's
Was that your first year doing
it? Yeah, first year this year.
Okay.
So, and I don't think people really, you know, when you look at people who are designer makers and they start off as a designer maker, and they go through all the processes of learning how to make as they go along. But if you're trained as a traditional jeweler, you're doing it backwards.
Yes.
You've got this traditional style or way of working. Then you have to find your style, which is, I don't know if it's harder or easier, because I know a lot of the younger people who have all these amazing ideas, but they don't have the skill set to do it. But in doing that, you could still hire people if you could save the money to hire people to do your work for you, which is why you've got so many individual designer makers or jewelry designers coming out now, because they have that capability. They've either worked in a different industry, saved the money and moved on. But for me to design a whole collection in a relatively short period, it's like, that was a bit of a panic. So I think it's more, at the moment, I'm going to work towards that. And I've got an idea that I wanted to do for this Goldsmiths, but I'm going to try to do it for the next one. Wow. If I couldn't.
Was it successful for you? Did you
It
enjoy
was,
it?
you know what, it was definitely a learning curve and a great experience, because you get to meet such, it's like you meet, I think their footfall was something like 1,000, 9,000 people in a week. So you've got all those people who are super enthusiastic about learning everything about you and your jewelry and
Yeah.
your path. And it was really nice to see that so many people are actually, they spend their money to come and see craftspeople, which is amazing. You know, they were even making it down when there were train strikes and tube strikes,
Yeah.
and they still found their way there just to see it all. And, you know, they're just generally massive jewelry enthusiasts, and guys who wear cufflinks and
Yes.
rings and just collect stones just because they love them. And just think, really? That's just so cool. You know, I thought it was just
That
normal,
was just me.
weirdos in the trade that do that. It's like just random guys who do this outside. It was pretty cool. But yeah, definitely worth 100% worth the experience. I can see why people do it year after year after year, because it is such a great institution. And I mean, there is so much, they've done it so well, and yet there is so much room for improvement as well, which is, you know, as soon as they start tying it in with the big houses like Christie's and Sotheby's and trying to convince them to get their clients to us and this, that, and the other, and advertise, you know,
Right.
keep it in that high circle, I think you know, the sky's the limit, really.
So
And
is that something you see where they could improve, where
yeah,
they're
they could
not
do.
doing
I
at
mean,
the moment?
there's all, it's very easy to say all this stuff. I don't know about all the red tape and everything else that has to go with it, because I don't even know if companies like Christie's and Sotheby's do advertising for other companies, because they're so big an institution on their own. But you know, it's always something like that. There is always an outlet where you can get that you know, the catchment area of those kind of clientele. But yeah, it's absolutely fascinating.
But I'd imagine it's good for them for new blood like you coming through, because I know a couple of I attend Morley College, and a couple of my tutors did it for the first time. So it must be good for
Yes.
goldsmiths to have new people get have a new perspective and
Yeah.
feedback that. And I'm assuming they ask for your feedback, do they, on how they can
I mean,
improve and how they can change?
yeah, they do. And I mean, it's been difficult for them since COVID and all the rest of it, and the big crash. I mean, it because really we are in a luxury market. You know, it is only jewelry, as people say. You know, you can still get married without a bloody wedding ring. It's symbolic at the end of the day, and that's the most important bit of jewelry you should be getting. But it is still a very important thing to people, and whether they hold memories or passing on personalities or anything, they are, it is a very important lifestyle. So what's fascinating is that people still do spend so much money, or they save up for the year to spend at these fairs. And the passion for making jewelry, like places like Morley College, it is absolutely fabulous. Like the teaching you guys get in that place is just, I judged a competition, oh gosh, when was that, earlier on this year?
That
And
was
many of
Croic,
the, yeah, Croic.
and I was one of the runners up.
Wicked, wicked man. Yeah, you guys shocked me. I was like, no, nah, I don't want to judge that. It's going to be rubbish. And then I turned up, it's like, whoa, that's deep. You guys done good. Yeah, you guys did really well. Absolutely shocked me. The funniest part was, like, she goes, because when we were talking about it, it's like, yeah, some people entered grills. It's like, I hate grills. I hate grills. I hate grills with a passion. I'm gonna just cuss. You don't want me as a judge. I will just start cussing people. She goes, no, that's why we want you. I said, all right, cool. And then I saw the grills, like, you know what? I can't really let you know. They've actually done
Really?
pretty well.
You've
Yeah.
changed your mind about
Yeah,
grills.
I mean,
That's
I still
so
hate grills,
funny.
but the
But
quality of them
these
were
were
very
high
good.
quality grills.
Yeah, they were decent. I was like, all right, you've done good. And then I saw him afterwards, the guy who made them, was like, yeah, got to show you, man. You've done well. You've done well. I
Mean,
hate
that
grills.
that's really encouraging to hear, because for me, as someone who doesn't have a traditional jewelry background, attended Morley as an evening class off the back of doing a foundation at UAL Chelsea, my aim was to go into architecture. So for me, finding somewhere like Morley where I could express my style of jewellery making, which, as I'm sure you, I don't know if you remember, is not traditional jewellery making, has been so great. And there are amazing tutors there. And then to have someone of your caliber actually looking at our work as well, has been really great. So, you know, the Croat competition and the exposure to other people in the industry was just brilliant.
Yeah, I thought, you know what, for people who have done it that part time, I would have said from some of the people in there that are allegedly doing it full time, some of the part time students, their quality, it's a crossover between, you can see your love of the art form showing through your work, whereas the people who are trying to make a business out of it, theirs was a lot more clinical and there was no passion in it. It was kind of like, well, I've just done this because it's easy to reproduce and I could hit a price point.
Yeah.
Whereas a lot of the Morley College lot, their artwork was so nice. It was so nicely finished. And you could tell there is no way it's economically viable. You know, there's no way in hell you could sell it because it's just taking you 90 hours to make.
Exactly.
Yeah. But, you know, you could tell it's just beautiful work and their passion has been put into it. And that's the thing. Like, when you start making something, you know, say like a wedding band, it may take you 3-4 hours to make it. And then by the end of it, like as you go on in the years, you might be able to get that down to 15 minutes, really.
Yeah.
If everything's going to plan and you work fast, because come Christmas time, that's when you have to speed up and everything happens, you know, but that's just down to experience and repetition.
Yeah.
So if you all can keep that creativity and passion and don't get caught up in the whole
sell.
You know, making money and living stuff that.
But it's hard because ultimately, yes, you know, as jewelers, you come into it, it's creative. We want to be creative. But at the end of the day, you've got mouths to feed, bills to pay. So I can see how it can be easy to morph into that more production line way of thinking.
It is very easy, very, very easy to do that. But I think if you keep your, like me, for instance, my jobs are always over-engineered, no matter what I make.
What do you mean by that?
Well, it's things like I always try to put more detail into parts, or I try to make things extremely clean or accurate in places that normal people just don't notice, but I notice it. So you always try to make every job you do something you're happy with,
right?
Which you generally won't be happy with because you've made it yourself, so you can always know all the mistakes and stuff, but aim for a higher quality than is necessary in everything you do, and you're only going to improve if you continuously do that. You can't help but improve.
So what would you say is your greatest fear when it comes to making? Imagine having worked with the people you've worked with, I'm sure you've worked with some crazy expensive jewels, and what's the thing where you think, oh my god, okay, I need to just
I don't think I get anything like that now. I used to when I started, I was like, oh my god, I don't want to play with that. But then I suppose working for Graff for so long and playing around with such giant gemstones, you got very blasé about it, you know. It's weird, it's like, oh bloody hell, another 50 something carat, nah, whatever, bored of that, another 100 million pound brooch. Jesus. But yeah, it's crazy. But now I think it's not so much afraid of working on things, you're just more cautious and know where to watch. Gemstones are always an interesting one, where you've got to be, you know, obviously things like emeralds or softer stones that these new designer makers are coming out with, like, I want to use this. It's like, that's a really stupid stone to use in jewelry. It's like 2 on the Mohs scale, it's going to break. Yes, but I love the color. It's like, don't do it. But okay. You know, things like that, you just need to know what you're doing, really, and just be very, very careful with it. If you've got something of high value, work on it very quickly, get it the hell out of your workshop and back to the clients, so you don't keep it, because you don't want that in your world. So just move that one along. Yeah, but apart from that, even if you have a giant diamond cuff, it is nothing different from that to a diamond fully set ET. It's just metal and diamonds.
Yeah.
What are you worried about?
Yeah. So look at it that way.
If you don't know how to make it, ask questions.
Yeah.
Someone out there has made it, or at least has an idea how to make it, or has an idea of someone who else has made one. So just ask questions.
Yeah.
Because we all have to start somewhere. If those people only know how to make cuffs, they're the only ones who are going to know how to make cuffs forever. And when they die, who's going to be able to make it? So. Yeah. Ask questions. You might make it wrong. You might make a load of mistakes. You'll probably lose out money. But that learning curve you're going to get,
yeah,
you learn something. So
yeah.
So
what brings you the greatest joy when you're making?
Oh, just the making. I love just the making, just creating something out of nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Going into retail has been an interesting one, because before I just liked, you know, I designed things on the CAD or on CAD or 3D, or whether it would be wax carving or whatever. And I'll go from that and then assemble, you know, clean up the pieces, assemble it, or hand make some parts. I love making mechanical parts, so that's snaps and clasps and all that kind of things. Absolutely love doing that. But when you're working for workshops, you don't really see, you never see the end client. But doing retail, you get their mother's old jewelry or their grandmother's old jewelry, and you remodel it, and then you give it back to them, and they break down in tears in your shop. You're like, bloody hell, that's really nice to see that you're passing on something and it means so much to them, which is fantastic. It's absolutely fantastic seeing that. So that's a really good part of it that a lot of us never really get.
Definitely in our jobs.
So that's one bonus of having retail.
Mm.
The rest of it, I haven't seen any other bonuses.
And how long has it been since 2016?
Oh man, no. Well, we signed the lease on this place February and it locked down in March.
Right. Oh god.
It was amazing, like timing wise, it was fantastic. But you know what? It was a bit of a blessing because we were able to refurbish the whole shop, rerun the electrics, set it out how we wanted to.
Right.
So otherwise you would have come into the place and just used it and started business straight away.
Yeah.
And this kind of gave us the time to model it the way we wanted and grow it that way. So it's been good. And plus, we have no idea on retail. Like, none of us in the wife, no idea. I've never done retail before. You got to think, when I left school, I went straight into uni.
Right.
And then I worked in workshops during uni.
Yeah.
And so then when I left, I went straight into a workshop.
Stuff or...
I avoided it like the plague. Bollocks to that.
So literally a baptism by fire. You're just like,
straight in.
Like, I mean, sometimes that's the best way, because if you said that's how you learn. You learn by your mistakes.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, you're just dealing with people. So, hey.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And you know what? They're not bringing anything you can't deal with.
Yeah, exactly.
So... And again, like, if I can't deal with it, I know someone who can. So mm-hmm. it helps.
Yeah.
And places like the IPG, there's like a wealth of knowledge in that bloody place. Yeah. All these top workers from every industry in the trade. So it always helps. Just ask questions like, what do I do with this?
Yeah.
And then someone has an answer. So,
what other creatives, living or dead, inspire you in your work and...
Oh God. Creatives, I would always say, when I got into art, I always wanted to do sculpture, as I said earlier, and that would be the, you know, Renaissance artists like Bernini, Cellini, Michelangelo, Da Vinci.
They were the classic. Kind of,
just, you know, you look at their work and you think, holy Lord, how was that done in a lifetime?
Yeah.
And jewellery wise, oh, there's so many. People like Graff and Mossiev, how they've achieved what they've achieved in a lifetime. That's mm-hmm. absolutely amazing. Stephen Webster, again, the guy's like visionary wise, mm-hmm. you know, he has so many brilliant ideas without even trying.
Mm-hmm.
There are a load of different mounters and silversmiths within the trade that are just little geniuses in their own little workshop, but no one hears about them because they're much like me and hide away in a workshop. It's like, don't want to see the world. it's weird, like, there are a lot of people in this industry that are absolutely fantastic and they don't ever shout about it, because they've always been, you're only as good as your last job. Yeah. So that kind of thing, it's kind of like, I made this ring. It went really well. Great. I just had to solder this jump ring onto a pendant. I melted it. You're an idiot. It's like you go, bang. I'm a genius. No, I'm a complete twat. And then that's how the trade goes. And that's what I love about it. Everyone's just so humble about what they do, because everything can go wrong in a blink of an eye.
I suppose that's it. You know, creativity, it is riding a wave. It's not a straight trajectory. You have weeks where you're like, yes, I get this. Or you get an idea and you're like, yeah, I really want to make that. And then you think, how the hell do I make that? I don't have the skill set.
Yeah.
So it is a roller coaster. But I think the fact that, you know, you've been on it as long as you have been, and I'm kind of very kind of, I think, early on in it, but I'm still loving it, means there's something in it. So
I mean, you're making things with your hands all day, and it's the best job ever. And the best thing is, like, if it works out, you get paid for it every now and again, which is fantastic. You know, it helps.
Cha-ching.
Yeah. But it's really funny. It's like everyone goes, oh, you must make loads of money. You make jewelry. I was like, no. People who buy my jewelry, some of them have money.
Yes.
Whatever we make goes on to the next job
to
buy the metal.
That's so funny.
And the stones.
I think the best advice someone was giving me, particularly in terms of pricing work, because that's something that I'm constantly battling with, the pricing. They said, you are not your customer.
Yeah.
That's the way you've got to look at it. And that was a real light bulb moment for me, making me think, okay, all right. Yeah. That's what I need to...
It is a curse, really, because although, you know, you recognize your skill and the amount of time and effort it's taking you to gain what you know, you still undersell yourself because you think, oh, no, I know this, that, and the other could have been better.
Do you still do that?
Oh, yeah. You always do. You always do. You always will. Always will. But then you got to look at it this way, is that that's why these big companies hire people to do the pricing.
Right.
Because that's their job. They know the market and the people who these pieces are directed to.
Yeah.
So they have a piece. They know the intrinsic value of it, like this diamond cost, whatever. Yeah. They'll know what the markup is. Like, I think like companies like Tiffany or what, I think they were doing, I think some of them multiply it by 8, 10, 12 times. So they know their markup. They know their clientele who are buying these things.
Yeah.
So it's just, that's a full job. It's, you know, for us to be able to do everything, you're asking a lot of one person.
Yeah.
Especially, it's like, can you do marketing? No, I'm a bloody trained mounter. Yeah. I don't know how to do marketing. And I mean, what the hell's an influencer? I don't know what it is. I'm old, man. No. You know, it's all kind of stuff like that. I'm like, what? What do you mean there's a job?
Someone gets paid for that?
So, exactly. Take photos of food? What kind of shit was there? Crazy.
Oh.
So, you know, you've got to kind of ask a lot of questions. People can only advise you until you reach a certain stage where you can hire someone to do it for you.
Mm-hmm.
But then that's a different... What are you looking for? There are so many factions now within this small industry.
Yes.
I just think it's incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's been your favorite commission to date? What's the piece that you've made where you thought,
I've made some pretty cool stuff. Just did a engagement ring with about 140 grand diamond in it. That was quite nice.
God.
Yeah, that was one, you get it in, you get it out straight away. You just don't sit on that stone. You don't want it in your in your building. That was pretty cool. That was in here for about a day, 2 days maybe. It's gone. Yeah, did not sit on that at all. Don't want it here. I did this very cool cuff for Boodles a while back. That was quite funky. Some stuff I made for Goldsmiths. That was quite a lot of fun to do.
Mm.
You know, I could have fun with it because of my own stuff. I don't have to answer to anyone. So it was, that was a lot of fun. And, you know, the reception I got for it was quite good. So that kind of makes me want to make some more. So
did you have a theme for Goldsmiths?
A very loose theme because I didn't really know what to expect there. Mm-hmm. And the hardest part for me is trying to break away from my traditional training, which I failed miserably at in retrospect. It was still very colourful and everything else the way I wanted it. But everyone came up and was like, what's your story? I told them, say, traditionally trained, I could tell.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah.
But
even
that's
though
not a bad thing.
It's not a bad thing at all, but it's kind of, it's a very difficult thing to break away from.
Mm.
So look at that competition, how creative that work was. Some of it was highly, highly finished, but it's not traditional. Whereas mine would be highly finished, but traditional style.
Right.
And I love traditional jewelry, so it doesn't bother me too much, but I just didn't want to make halo rings and all the other boring stuff that I've been making for many years.
But again, I think that's the great thing with jewelry. There's something for everyone. You know, there's so many people with different tastes. There are always going to be people that love traditional jewelry or that want something a bit more funky and a bit more modern. So it's just finding your people.
That's the challenge. I mean, one of the bits of knowledge that I was passed on was like, remember your jewelry, you're only making it for 1% of the population, maybe less than 1%.
Yeah.
Don't try to please everybody. You
know,
you're supposed to let people find your style and like your style, not the other way around. You're not a Pandora trying to please everybody.
It's about Although, kind of niching down.
By their business model, they are the third biggest jewelry company in the world. So you can't knock them too bad. But
well, we won't even go there.
They've done good.
They're doing something right. It might not be their jewelry, but they're doing something right.
Doing good. Can't knock them. It's a genius idea. Guys, I thought, wow, what, that is so clever. I mean, guys never know what to buy a woman. Let's just buy you another charm. That would blag it for another.
Exactly.
Genius. Genius. If I wasn't making jewellery, I'll be buying that all day long. I forgot, forgot your birthday. Forgot your anniversary.
Let's get your charm.
Another charm. Need another wrist. Let's go. Another bracelet. Let's go.
So what do you listen to when you're not in the workshop? Because I know you're someone that likes to walk up at carnival. So I'm expecting there's possibly some soca on the playlist.
Blaring out soca music, winding up myself in the workshop like a fool. I listen to a lot of stuff in the workshop, actually. Loads. Kind of, you know, I'm an 80s baby, so I'm still listening to my old, I grew up on rock music. Love
oh,
it.
Really?
So,
like what? Rock,
oh, everything from 60s, 70s rock, 80s rock, 90s rock, so grunge, everything you could think of. Massive, you know, Metallica, Guns N' Roses, all that.
Wow, I wasn't expecting that.
Love it. Led Zeppelin, oh God, loads of stuff. And then, again, listen to all my soca music and soul music, you know, James Brown, funk. I used to break dance a lot, so I still listen to break beats and stuff like that. And and then when I destroyed myself, I just listen to audiobooks all day long as, you know, learn stuff as I'm sitting there working. Because the joy of working at our bench, and we're so zoned in with what our hands are doing, we just listen to audiobooks and then, you know, you pick up knowledge as you work. So I started learning a CAD program I just used to have my phone sitting right there by my computer screen and just playing tutorials off YouTube. Constantly
watching the tutorial.
Well, it was just there. Working. I couldn't watch it because I was working or working with my hands or working at the computer, but it was always there on my phone. When I bought the program and I started learning it, I kind of retained half the knowledge I picked up from just listening to these guys.
Okay.
And so it's things like that. You do take it in. So if you're going to listen to audiobooks, listen to something that you can learn something from, whether it's business or something, and then you will take it in. And it's always, you know, even if it clicks your brain to go in a different direction, it's like, I need to think about that, or I need to research that, and you'll look into it later on. Because the biggest issue with what it came to me was, I know how to make stuff, I don't know how to run the business side.
Right.
And that was the big learning curve for me, because when you start, you know, especially when you have a shop, you've got to think of your insurances, your opening hours, how much time does it take you to set up in the day? How would you buy stock? And then you have to insure that stock. Then you have to insure your tools. What tools are you missing? You have to buy that. And then all these things go into your big cost of how much are you retailing your goods for? And then you have to do your bespoke work on the side of that. And then people pay for design consultation and things like that. So it's all adds up. And then by the end of it, by the time you've spent all the time figuring that out, you're like, well, I can't charge that. You're like, what?
Exactly.
It's crazy. So that's the learning curve. And then when you hear these talks and how people started businesses, you're like, well, they've done it. What's the difference? You can do the same. It's not that hard.
It's just learning another skill set, isn't it? But it's a necessary one,
and having the bollocks to do it. I mean, a lot of us, because we all have this kind of imposter syndrome where we don't think we're good enough, whereas, you know, why aren't you good enough? I know a lot of little rich people who are starting up jewelry brands and they can't make or draw. They just have other people doing it for them, but they're doing it. People with skills just hiding away in a workshop, thinking they could only just earn whatever to put a two-piece casting together, where they could be the next Sean Lean or Theo Fennell or Leo de Vroomen. You know, why not? I think just have the bollocks and just try it. Going blind, just the way I do. No planning, just have a go.
Oh, well, we're rapidly running out of time. So I'm going to finish with my last question to you to say, what advice would you give to someone going into jewelry? And I think you've kind of given some of it, but is there anything else you'd give as a tip?
Going into jewelry, find a good circle of people you can bounce ideas off. Because our biggest thing is we'll always try to work alone because we're very micromanaging in our mindsets. But try to find a really good setter that you get along with that gets and understand your style. Whether or not you're starting together and they're improving, you're improving, it's fine. But you all could talk to each other, find a good polishing house or a polisher that could do your stuff. Don't try to do everything yourself. It's pointless. If you're already in the industry but you want to grow, I would say try to find your close allies and work along with them. Find people who can teach you and then find people you can grow with. Find a good setter, find a good polisher, find a good enameler, engravers, all these things because they are trades on their own. Don't try to do everything yourself because you'll end up being a jack of all trades and master of none. Try to perfect your own thing and what you're doing, and don't get distracted by other things. The other thing I would say would be just keep reading and making yourself visible. Keep going out and going to exhibitions to keep your creativity up and running. Because when you're in our industry, you spend much of your life behind a bench pin, just working away into the early hours without any conversation with anybody normally. So if you can get your head around that, and get yourself out there and just see what the rest of the world is doing. You'll be amazed that our trade is a lot bigger than we think it is in England. So just keep networking. Network all the time, because you'd realize a lot of people are more than willing to give you time and will help you any which way they can. So you'd be surprised.
Great. And so, in terms of your unique skill set, what do you think has helped you become successful? What's Darren Sherwood's secret superpower?
I think with me, people know I'll get the job done depending on whatever time I get it and whatever pressures are on. If I say I'm going to deliver, I deliver on time. Over the years, I have learned to better decipher people's terrible design work, and that is definitely a goddamn superpower as far as I'm concerned. Because some of the drawings I've got that are designers' sketches and all the rest of it, I'm like, mate, that is not. So yeah, that is my superpower. Yeah, just the being very disciplined when it comes to work and getting things done. In our trade, it's very unlikely you'll get that. I'm going to work on this ring from start to finish, and nothing's going to distract me. Normally, it is I'm working on 10 jobs at the same time. While one is cooling down, I'll do this part of this other one. And while that's doing something else or soaking out an acid, I'll do this. And then you switch jobs around. And that once you learn how to multitask like that, when you're working for a smaller company, but it's quite fast paced, you might be on like 15 jobs at the same time. And then it's quite a lot of fun actually juggling and trying to remember what you're doing with everything. And
You quite like that pressure working like that.
But yeah, I'm lucky enough in a sense that because I love doing mechanical things in jewelry and building big structures and where I've worked in the past on pieces I've worked on, I am lucky enough to have the experience to work on such big pieces and to know how structures are put together. And which springs work, which mechanisms work on a lot of things. So that at the moment, I am pretty lucky in a sense that I'm the kind of go-to person for a lot of companies if those jobs arise. So I'm sure there are other people out there who can do them just as well, if not better than me.
But again, it sounds like you've networked well, so people know that that's your skill
Yeah.
set.
Yeah. And I mean, again, it is not even about when it comes to that kind of work. It's not, you can't network and say, yeah, I'm amazing, I'm this, that, and the other, because at the end of the day, you could
Your
tell me
work.
that I need to see your work, I need to see what you've made. So, and then you talk to the people who run the companies and say, were you happy with that piece? And yes, we were. And that's how you get to know, that's how you get to know people really. So just make sure your work standard is as high as it can possibly be, and you can't really go wrong.
And so on that, talking about standards, what would you say you're not good at? Or what would
The
you like to
bloody
be
hell,
better at?
so much, so much. Oh God, So much. To be honest, the things I'm not good at, I normally outsource now because I've learned to stop beating myself up trying to do it all myself. You know, there's just no point. I can do stone setting. I don't enjoy doing stone setting. I would give it to a stone setter. Engraving, I've tried it. I've stabbed my hands many a time. Much blood has been spilled. I will not do it again. Give it to someone else. Enameling, I've melted things, amazingly melted things. Like, it was beautiful. Like a massive blob of molten. Yeah, that just went very wrong. Give that to someone else. I don't try to. I think the things that I'm bad at that I really want to be better at would be things more in the sculptural side of CAD. But that is just due to me wanting to learn more. So it's not saying I'm proficient in it now, but there's always room for improvement. So I've not reached where I want to get to yet. And that is kind of the level of the guys who do special effects for movies. That's where I want to be.
That's it.
So
You set
completely
the
different level of what we need for jewelry. But there we go.
bar
That's kind of what I'm aiming for. So.
quite high. Brilliant. But it's nice that to have those ambitions, because I think that's what drives us. And even if it's an ambition outside of what we're doing day to day, it's just sort of keeps us striving. So
Exactly.
that's great. I really, really enjoy chatting to you. And I'm sure people will enjoy listening and would hopefully like to find out more. So where can we find you?
I'm on Instagram under Sherwood Jewelry, or my more bespoke brand is Mr. Sherwood London. And I'm gradually posting more and more things on that. So either of those websites, MrSherwood.com or SherwoodJewelry.com, and I'm on there. Hopefully, I will be doing a newsletter, so please sign up. It's on my list of many things to do. Yeah, and
And where's
otherwise,
your shop? Where's your retail outlet?
my retail shop is in Purley. Just not too far away from Purley Station, so 20 minutes out of Hatton Garden, come up the road. I'm always hiding in the workshop, as I've said earlier. So you'll see me run upstairs, miserable that I have to answer the door to
Oh
people,
dear.
but.
Well, you're not looking miserable now. You've had a great
No.
smile throughout this chat, so it's
All
been
good.
brilliant.
Nothing but sunshine.
Oh, thank you so much, Dan. This has been fantastic. I'm really
Thank you for
pleased
having
that
me.
Russell pointed me in your direction. As I said, I've
Yeah.
met a couple of times in person, but it's been really brief. But this has been great. So thank you.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. And keep an eye on the IPG. Some good things coming in the future. And definitely look to join as an associate member until you become a fellow, and it helps build your skill, and you've got like a big wealth of knowledge there of a lot of very clever people, so who have probably forgotten more than we know, so it's well
And I
worth
think
it.
that's why Russell wanted me to tap into the members, because you all have such different skill sets and knowledge, and he doesn't want that to be something that just kind of evaporates or gets lost or overlooked. So no, I really appreciate it.
Fantastic.
Brilliant.
Thanks,
Thanks so
Sam.
much, Darren.
No problem. All the best.
Cheers. And
Take care.
you
Bye
too.
bye.
Take care. Bye.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed the episode and come back to us another couple of weeks for the next one. In the meantime, also thanks to Alfie Amadeus for the amazing track of Topi, which is our theme music. See you soon. Bye bye.